Hello. Today's episode is sponsored by SunsetLakeCBD.com. SunsetLakeCBD.com has the best CBD. And you get a 20% discount with the coupon code LEFTISBEST. They have tinctures. They have gummies. They have sour gummies. They have melatonin with elderberry gummies for sleeping. They have bud and keef and pre-rolls. They have fudge and coffee with CBD. All of their products are amazing. I use just about all of them, although I must admit that I had one run in with the fudge, and then I was like, I can't do that again.
Too dangerous.
Too dangerous for me. But everything else, I've been using heavily leaning on the tinctures and the melatonin, as folks know, but also the arnica and CBD rub for your muscles. I use on my eczema. I don't feel uncomfortable saying that. And it works. Check out Sunset Lake. They are a great company. They use integrated pest management. They don't use pesticides. They use organic fertilizer. They use regenerative farming practices. And they are also great movement partners. They've donated over $25,000 at least over the past couple of years with that we've been involved with them, supporting things like strike funds and soup kitchens and Innocence Project and Give Directly and refugees, on and on and on. They're a great company, mostly employee owned, and you can't go wrong. SunsetLakeCBD.com. Check it out today. Left is best. Gets you 20% off. And now for the show that they sponsored.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, July 8th, 2022. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, co-host of The Politics of Everything, writer for The New Republic and proprietor of The Good AP, Alex Perrine will be joining us. And then we'll be talking to my old friend Liz Winstead, who has been working on reproductive rights issues for years. Got an event coming up. Now more than ever, we need to support these type of organizations. Meanwhile, California will start making insulin for Californians. No word on whether they'll be selling it nationally, but we will have more on that. Former Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe assassinated. Biden to announce some pretty useless executive actions on abortion rights. And despite Fed actions, 372,000 new jobs created in June. Unemployment still at 3.6. Derek Chauvin sentenced to 21 years in federal prison for violating George Floyd's civil rights. Wisconsin State Supreme Court disallows ballot boxes. Trump White House counsel Pat Cipollone to testify privately to the January 6th committee today. Elon Musk once again trying to slink away from buying Twitter. Lindsey Graham now asserting that he doesn't have to pay attention to a Georgian grand jury subpoena. He's trying to hide shut himself in a closet to avoid. Yeah, you saw where my mind. You guys watched me doing that.
Will you go there? And you did.
Yeah. Well, he's trying to avoid that subpoena. So that's one way of avoiding it.
It's a good place to hide. There's no windows. No one can see you.
Exactly. Democrats reviving Medicare drug negotiations and rolling back some of Trump's tax cuts in a little little dance with Mitch McConnell. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is Friday. It's Casual Friday. Emma Viglin?
Yes.
You actually look a little dressed up today.
Do I?
Yeah.
This shirt was like
$15.
No. Okay. No, I have one of it in another color, and I just decide to invest in another. Okay. But it's not. I'm wearing jeans.
That's my system.
As I do every day. Yeah, right?
Just multiple of the same cheap article.
Although black kind of messes with the camera, although I think I fixed it for the most part.
I think it's okay today.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah. Anyway, hi.
Hi. I got a couple of funny IMs already.
Oh, do you still have that one that I didn't get to read yesterday? Someone said, sent in, and I wanted to give you credit. When we played the Dark Horse clip, we went off air, and I saw the IM as soon as we went off air. They said that Dark Horse is NPR in the streets, Fox News in the sheets, something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm butchering it. It was so good. So good job, IMer.
Sam Guzzles Buckets
says
you were out yesterday. Abe was killed yesterday. Coincidence? yesterday, maybe we'll talk about this. I didn't even bother to pull a clip. These guys didn't even know about it. I went on to a Twitch streamer's named Destiny's program because he had taken issue with the last video that we did about Kyle Rittenhouse, where I said multiple times that he killed two people because he killed two people. And I think the reason why we were talking about that, no, I do know the reason why we're talking about it, because he's doing this, he's monetizing it now. He's monetizing the killing of two people and the shooting of one. And I find that abhorrent. I mean, it's not inconceivable to me that someone could, you know, a kid his age who, geared up to go, patrol Kenosha on his own, makes a mistake, a series of really bad decisions because he's young and kills two people. He was found not guilty of murder by way of self-defense because they were coming at him. But nevertheless, he did kill two people. And, you know, there's two ways you can react to that. One is you can sort of examine the choices that you made vow to do better so that you don't, or you could monetize the fact that you killed two people and ended their lives. And so, we took issue with that. And then just before I went on, somebody had sent the clip. I didn't realize he had done a clip about the video that we did where Destiny had suggested if the races were different, I would have been so excited to cheer on that person that I would have guzzled buckets of that person's
okay, bodily fluid.
Yeah, but not pee.
Mm-hmm.
And I took issue with that, not the least of which because I say everything in moderation. I wouldn't buckets of anything.
Would do a tasting first.
It's just moderation. But then the other issue is that I've been doing this for 18 years. I don't know if there's ever been an occasion where we've had protesters, even if they were violent, protesters. Like, for instance, if a black person had taken a gun and shot people in Charlotte, Charlottesville marchers, he was the idea that I would cheer that on. I found a little bit, both incorrect and sort of exactly what he claims that we were doing by saying that. By mentioning that Kyle Rittenhouse went from a different town into Kenosha.
Seems kind of pedantic.
Well, the idea is that you're framing it like he doesn't have a connection to that community. To me, it he didn't have the same connection to that. He had friends there who were offering, you know, and that's where he stored the gun, apparently.
The roads that he traveled on to that community connected them to it.
But even if he did have connections to that community, like a 17-year-old has a connection to a community, I still think you're an asshole for going on and monetizing the fact that you killed two people.
Yeah. Go on Crowder and talk about the women you want to sleep with at the colleges that don't want to accept you.
Walking onto stage at CPAC to, like, explosions and music and fireworks and then becoming some sort of celebrity. So, yeah, that's kind of unconscionable.
Yep.
I don't know.
I'm going to watch that debate.
Nick in Japan says, some things I want to say about the assassination of Abe. Conservatives will say this is proof that criminals will find a way to get a gun no matter what. But this guy's painstakingly homemade gun was only able to get two shots off and kill one person, after which he was taken down by unarmed security. If this were America, five people would be dead. Also, this one shooting is shocking on the level of American school shootings, not because it's as common as school shootings, but because it isn't. It's just the overall feel. Yes,
yeah,
good
well
point.
Put.
A couple other sort of house cleaning things before we get into stuff. It has come to my attention that our Discord at majoritydiscord.com now has over 6,000 members.
Wow.
Which is nuts.
We love the Discord.
And I just want to do a shout out to some of our moderators there. Ananine Quinine. Or Galactic Kyle, DJ Cold Case, F the Police, that's Geek Wonk, JMO, I think it's JMO or JMO, J, Lily, Noog Wrangler, I know I'm spelling it, I'm not saying it right, and Truth Wrangler. So thank you, folks. That community is growing leaps and bounds. And I want to do a shout out while we're here because I can't, you know, sometimes like Saul will say, who do you love better, me or Myla? Mm-hmm. And I will say, I love you equally. But I may have my fingers crossed, but I would never tell him who I favor. But I want to say shout out to our moderators on YouTube too, Kennedy Crouch, Midi Doctors, and Bob Carmody, M. Toussaint. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. You guys are creating really great communities. And lastly, there is Rashida Tlaib has introduced a measure that would curb the ability of the Espionage Act to prosecute or persecute dissidents, whistleblowers, and publishers. And so you can... We'll put a link. I put that in our IM, Matt. We'll put a link into our podcast and YouTube descriptions where you can sign on to help support that endeavor. It is an Amendment 617 to the National Defense Authorization Act, and it's going to make it much harder to prosecute national security whistleblowers, whether it was Daniel Ellsberg, Manning, Snowden, Hale. Don't know what it would have done for some of the earlier ones, but I suspect, you know, that is not what the Espionage Act was supposed to be about. Okay, let's get to this. This is a big deal in my estimation, if it happens. And I don't know. I think it will happen. But here is Gavin Newsom announcing that they're going to spend $100 million in the budget
in California
to produce insulin. And the closest we've gotten to this is the VA will do this with a couple of generic drugs if there's a shortage. They never talk about it because there's no one, no one who's doing that, it's in their interest to publicize it because they want to keep their head down. And if I remember correctly, Elizabeth Warren had a proposal to also produce, to have the government produce some generic drugs if there was a shortage. But no one has come anywhere close to, we're just going to take this one class of generic drugs, insulin, that was actually designed with trying to keep it generic in perpetuity, I think, by the Canadian who developed it. And this is, it's a 100-year-old drug, I think it is now. And this, I think, is a big, big deal. Listen to this.
On my first day in office, I signed an executive order to put California on the path towards creating our own prescription drugs. And now it's happening. California is going to make its own insulin. Nothing epitomizes market failures more than the cost of insulin. Many Americans experience out-of-pocket costs anywhere from $300 to $500 per month for this life-saving drug. California is now taking matters into our own hands. The budget I just signed sets aside $100 million so that we can contract to make our own insulin at a cheaper price, close to at cost, and to make it available to all. $50 million will go towards the development of low-cost insulin products, and an additional $50 million will go towards a California-based insulin manufacturing facility that will provide new, high-paying jobs and a stronger supply chain for the drug. Because in California, we know people should not go into debt to receive life-saving medication.
I don't know how...
Is this a deep fake?
Honestly, like, it is... It's such a good idea, and I don't know how, like, Kathy Hochul doesn't jump out in New York and also do this. I mean,
the reason, like, Newsom's probably doing this is because he and Pritzker are in a cold war for, like, who's going to be running on the Democratic ticket if Biden doesn't run in 2024. But this is the value of that kind of stuff, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't, like I say, I don't ever care about what people's intentions, you know, motivation for doing something good is. This is, I think, a huge deal. And then there's a lot of questions that I have. I'm not capable of answering at this point, but, like, can California sell it to other states?
Yeah.
I mean,
and when you mention Hochul, that puts pressure on her. I think Gustavo Rivera, state senator, who we had at our live show in Brooklyn, had introduced in the state Senate a bill that caps insulin at $30. So hopefully that sets off a chain reaction, especially because, you know, if California is doing something, New York takes notice, understandably.
And I mean, you know, California got like, what, 40 million people? In New York, you got like 20 million people. You start producing insulin for them, and then if it's possible, I don't understand why the state wouldn't be able to sell at state lines. It's not like I don't know what the analogy would be, but I'm sure there's some state produced products or something. Fees. I mean, you sell fee, you know, I guess maybe that's because you're doing those activities.
We have protectionism against our own state produced goods. Like, between state lines would be wild.
Well, that would be great because it would mean other states are doing it. But if other states are not doing it, I don't see why you wouldn't have, like, if you're Massachusetts, why wouldn't you make a deal with New York? Like, we'll give you 5% over cost and we'll just provide it for our people. They're going to save the money on the on the contributions to Medicaid and whatnot.
It's in your interest, too, if you're a governor, to be advertising that you're providing insulin at a low cost for your citizenry, and it puts pressure on other states.
Without a doubt.
I didn't even know this, but when insulin was first created, they sold the patent for $1 because the people who created insulin understood that it would change people's lives and it was so life-saving.
Yes.
And, like, what we're seeing now is why intellectual property, especially in the scope of medicine, is such a dangerous proposition and has gone way too far. And I'm happy to see that Newsom's undercutting it.
We're going to get to Alex Breen in just a moment. We got a couple of sponsors of today's program. And one is from the pharmaceutical company that overcharges for insulin.
Oh, no, what a coincidence. Disregard what we just said.
Disregard. Gavin Newsom is just a puppet. Look, I just want to make it clear. Obviously, we don't have that ad. But I also want to make it clear that I don't care about Gavin Newsom. I have been at times surprised by how, I think effective he has been in some things as governor, other things not so much. But I don't care. This is a good policy.
Yeah.
And anything that encourages politicians to do good policy, I think is good. Speaking of good things, we've had Professor Eddie Glaud on this program many times over the years. I think I started interviewing him, I think, back in the Air America days. And he's got a podcast out There will always be something distinct about our present day, yet, as you know, history haunts us. American democracy is at a crossroads, and we have to decide who we really are as a nation. History is Us, an important six-part documentary podcast series hosted by award-winning Princeton University professor Dr. Eddie Glaude, journeys back to face the truths about race at the heart of the American story, from the aftermath of the Civil War, the mid-20th century struggle for freedom, and the election of Barack Obama, the current-day racial reckoning. History is Us. Ask us questions about who we are as a nation, what race might reveal about our current crisis, and where we go from here. Through the voices of distinguished historians and scholars, this limited series gives listeners the background and education to understand how we got here and how we can all use history to clarify the choices before us. Listen to History Is Us, a presentation of Shining City Audio, C13 Originals, and John Meacham Studio. It's available now wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, one of our sponsors today is offering a free trial at aura.com/majority. You're going to want to check out this free trial because do you know what the fastest growing crime in America is? I know you guys do because you've heard me do this ad before. I don't know if you guys know, but I'm talking about identity theft. It happens to 1 in 20 Americans. It's been surging, and it affects millions of Americans. Yet, despite this, it happens to you, and you're shocked. You log into your email account one day. You see that your password's been changed. You start getting notifications from your activity from your bank, your credit cards, crypto accounts. You're like, what? There's panic. There's fear. You go through the, like, whatever it is, the seven layers of grief.
Stages.
Stages, shock, anger, frustration, and then you feel guilty because you didn't protect yourself. Well, that's why I am excited to partner with Aura, who is sponsoring this show today. Aura's identity theft protection, fraud monitoring, a VPN, password management, and antivirus software all combined into one easy-to-use app. Aura monitors the dark web for your emails, passwords, and social security numbers, sends alerts fast right to your phone and email. When it comes to fraud, every second matters. You connect your credit card and bank accounts, you get notified of any changes up to four times faster than Aura's competitors. Their VPN allows you to stay anonymous online by keeping your browsing history and personal information safe and encrypted. And their antivirus software will block malware and viruses before they infect your devices. Look, I plugged my email in there. I saw like a half a dozen places where it had been compromised. Changed my passwords, felt much more secure. And that was in the first, like, you do that for free. Protect you and your family from America's fastest growing crime. Try Aura for free for 2 weeks. See if any of you or your family's personal information has been compromised. Start your free trial at aura.com/majority. As always, we'll put links to those in the podcast and YouTube descriptions. And don't forget, it is your support that makes this show ultimately possible to thrive and survive. Do we need to take a break? We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Alex Parikh. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Cedar, Emma Vigeland on the Majority Report. Had a little bit of technical difficulties.
A little bit. Mm-hmm.
But that is the price that you pay if you want to bring on someone like our next guest, Alex Parikh, the co-host of the Politics of Everything, the proprietor of the AP, the one that's on Substack, and also, what are you, like a contributing editor to The New Republic?
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
All right. And we've got to project because we're talking to Alex on phone. We can hear him through our system, but it's like old school. I've done this. This is how the show was run basically the first like 6 years we did the show this way. So, Alex, I don't know where you want to start. It has been – I don't know. I just saw an IM – saying that they're somebody's desperately trying not to be blackpilled, and this is like it feels like that is sort of almost like the thing that I've found myself trying to do over the past week or two is how to get up in the morning and have some measure of hope. But, you know, we just started off with this thing from Gavin Newsom in California is going to produce their own insulin. And I don't know. I mean, we'll get into this other stuff in a minute. But I'm curious as to your take on this, because it really does feel like we're going to have to switch. There's going to be a new mode of operating for people, you know, who are looking for more progressive policies from our government, that where states are going to have to become more prominent in that fight.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, this is the time to get involved locally, because I think that, you know, I don't mean to sound pessimistic. I mean to sound realistic, but there's not a lot you can expect from Congress. There's not a lot you expect from the Senate, not a lot you can expect from this administration. But this is the time, obviously, now to actually figure out on a local level what can be done, and to organize at that level. And you know, a lot can be done. And at the same time, you know, local politics can be just as blackpilling often, depending on where you are. But you know, this is kind of the short term way forward, I think.
Yeah, and I think and certainly I've talked about in the past in my experience that local politics, not everywhere, but certainly, are far more susceptible to corruption than on a national level. However, it takes fewer people to
change everything,
to inhibit that corruption, because, you know, I mean, you just dollar for dollar. I mean, we had Aaron Kleinman on the other day. You know, they've got the States Project, and it's just every dollar you contribute to a state Senate race is like it has the weight of, I don't know, $100 that you would contribute to a federal Senate race, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
And the same with actually like organizing and being an activist or getting involved, taking over your local Democratic party, whatever it is. What do you know about the specifics of this insulin thing, if anything, insofar as like, can California sell insulin? Can they enter into the why not?
Yeah, I don't know that. I don't know all the details. I know that it's because of a law they passed not too long ago that sort of gave them the right to do this. And you know, we, I guess, benefit from when ambitious politicians wish to add things to their resume, right? More than just wishing to sort of hide from their responsibilities. And you know, on the left and in the Democratic Party, there's kind of a shocking lack of imagination among people who sort of want to advance, right? I think about, you know, Andrew Cuomo for 12 years thought he was going to be the future of the party and the president someday, and his ambitions were so limited. You know, it was like he wanted to put his dad's name on a bridge. You know, that was about it. So I don't know. I do think that like we have a generation of in blue states, these Democrats who actually might want to use some of the power they have to do stuff. But like the insulin thing is a great example of like, we could have been trying this. We could have been trying this kind of stuff already.
Yeah. And I think Newsom is going to, you know, hopefully what we get into some type of arms race, where every Democratic governor is trying to, you know, create their own sort of like a marquee program that they can. I mean, honestly, this is the best thing that could possibly happen in these circumstances. But let's talk about somebody who is still, I think, sort of stuck. I mean, and you say Cuomo. Not only did Cuomo Cuomo's ambition constrained. I think it's more accurate to say like his ambition was to constrain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
that's right.
Like, like he set out to make sure things didn't happen. Not that he didn't have an ambition, sufficient enough ambition to make things happen. He set out to inhibit anything that would happen. And it is, you know, like it is, I hope somebody takes a poll and, you know, a national poll and Gavin Newsom, like, is got a huge approval rating and people want him to run for president. So that, you know, Pritzker, you know, says like, well, wait a second, maybe I'll do that. And then Kathy Hochul does it and so on. But let's talk about somebody who's not doing that. I want to just read the first paragraph. This is from an AP report, not the good AP that you do, but this is from the more boring, less insightful AP. Facing pressure, Biden to sign order on abortion access. President Joe Biden will take executive action Friday to protect access to abortion, according to three people familiar with the matter, as he faces mounting pressure from Democrats to be more forceful on the subject. The idea that this could be written a week and a half after Roe v. Wade has been struck down is stunning. Like, it should have been, this should have been written 35 minutes after the ruling came down, and it should have been like, Democrats have whiplash with how fast Joe Biden got in front of a microphone to announce executive orders. I mean, this is just...
And they can't even use the excuse that they were taken by surprise, because it was leaked to the media that the opinion, and like, they just thought that Kamala Harris could go out there and say vote in the fall, and Biden could say vote in the fall, and Pelosi could send fundraising emails, and that they were going to be okay. But even this is upsetting to me, because there's really no there to this executive action. It's like protecting patient privacy to a degree. I mean, we can flesh that out. Yeah, Alex, I just like he there are so many actual things he could do. He's just worried about appearing like he's doing nothing.
Yeah. I mean, it's the right. I kind of lost the plot on the story of you know, who leaked the opinion or whatever. But, you know, one theory was like, you know, it was leaked to give Democrats time to prepare, which, you know, is in retrospect a joke. You know, like that if that was the intention, it didn't really work. It really, when you hear reporting that like Deborah Messing is like, why did we elect you? I don't understand. Like, I understand what's going on with Joe Biden, because he's been he has not been a huge friend to reproductive rights for most of his career. And politically, I think he is used to a world in which a politician like him has to triangulate on it. You know, he's whatever, he's a East Coast Catholic machine guy or whatever. But, you know, I just don't understand the White House being so flat-footed on this. And this idea that they can still just sort of say Roe is on the ballot when it's not, it's just gone. It's not on the ballot. Like, I don't know. I mean, they feel sort of disconnected from political reality in a way that feels.
And if Roe is on the ballot, if Roe is on the ballot, right? Like, then what are you proposing that is on the ballot in regards to Roe? Because all I hear from the Biden administration is what they can't do. They can't put abortion clinics on federal lands. They can't even entertain expanding the court. Like, if you want to create an urgency for Roe v. Wade on the ballot in the fall, then you have to propose something related to Roe v. Wade.
Yeah. And the lack of specificity is, I don't even think that, you know, I think that they say like, they've gotten a little bit more specific when they're like, you got to give us two more senators, right? Give us two more senators is the new line, but they can't even say what they do then, especially about the court. Because they've already preemptively ruled out any fundamental reform to the judiciary.
I guess if they got two more senators, they would presumably be able to get a filibuster carve out for whatever they're going to pass. But this is, I mean, what I find just so shocking about this is like, it is as if they are all Rip Van Winkle. Like they just have, like, I get it. They cut their teeth at a time where it was different, but like they are, it is there no one in the White House? Is there no advisors there that are like, hey, this is a big deal to people. And I am perfectly willing to accept the possibility that they don't have the authority to rent out federal offices to abortion providers in these states. However, I would say all the more reason to do it and have the courts stop you. Like, what are you trying to communicate to people? And if you're trying to communicate to people that the courts have been taken over, we need senators to put more courts in, then you take this, like, you need to force the issue. It may be the case that they don't have the authority to do this, but they certainly have the physical capacity to do it and then have the courts shut them down. And, yeah. And their reluctance to do that, they still think this is a losing issue. There was a poll that taken in the 19th district. I pay a lot of attention to that in New York State. It is a +5 Biden district that is going to change slightly to a 4.5 +4.5. But in an off-year election, that means the Democrat is going to lose, probably. It's a purple district. It has had a history of going back and forth. And when and they polled and the guy's down by like 3 points against a very odious Republican. I think this candidate who's running is a decent candidate, actually. And when they poll they take another poll with the Republicans' abortion stance and the Democrats' abortion stance, the guy's up by 6 points. And this, I mean, there's no more like evidence that you need. And they still, it's just, don't they remember the million woman march? I mean, like, you know, people could, take issue with just the idea of wearing, you know, funny hats. But the bottom line is, like, this is a winning issue.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, this is not the presidency that Joe Biden wanted to have for himself, right? Like, he did not want to be he wanted to be the return to normalcy guy, and the Democrats want to run on bringing things back to normal. And in that context, the sort of unprecedented rightward lurch of the unaccountable Supreme Court is like an inconvenience. It's like they didn't sign up for this. I think that it is a little...
Oh, you're frozen. Hold on for 1 second. You're frozen for a minute.
How reluctant. I'm back. All right.
I'm sorry.
I do think it's odd how reluctant they are to like go popularist on this. And again, it's like you can partly explain that by Biden's personal politics, but beyond that, it's as if they can't really conceive because they can't really like. They don't want to do unprecedented things, so they can't voice, we will fight, like, we will do these things. They kind of just want everything to just be, I think, back to some sort of status quo. And, beyond that, they feel really uncomfortable, I think.
It also feels like to me that there is a failure of the, like, for lack of a better term, almost like the managerial class within the Democratic Party. I mean, it really does feel like that because they're not, they don't, they see like, and I don't, I think people, it's very easy for people to underestimate the complete sort of like insanity of what it means to be what an administration is. You know, you got to come in, you have, you get elected on November, whatever, the first week of November, and you have 3 months to ramp up like 40,000 people in the government, and everything that the prior administration has done to inhibit your ability to sort of like get this startup business off the ground. And you've got to find people and you have all this like legacy baggage from your campaign and this and that. But they're not achieving the basic things that they thought they were going to achieve, whether it was like refugees, whether it was all of these other policies. They failed, I think, in terms of their political agenda. Joe Biden ran on Build Back Better. They were not able to get any part of that through. They didn't capitalize on their on the easy success that was there in their first 100 days. And they seemed completely tone deaf in terms of the politics that are going on here. And, you know, 6 months with consultants coming up with ultra MAGA. I mean, it's just it is. So, I mean, it is very much so about like turning to the states. We should say that in the Senate right now, I don't know how much you've been following this, but supposedly Schumer is negotiating again with Manchin. They supposedly have figured out, you know, some agreement on a rollback of some of the Trump tax cuts that would, for people making over $400,000 a year, bring back the 3.8% tax that would go to Medicare through pass-through entities. Supposedly, they've agreed on that, and they're going to do that through reconciliation. And it looks like they're playing hardball with McConnell, who has been trying to hold hostage this this bill to like increase U.S. competition. And just to be clear on this, that bill is provides tons of cash to American businesses, which, you know, these are industries, but it would provide $50 billion for the domestic semiconductor industry and more than $100 billion for the National Science Foundation for research and development. I'm all for it. I just want to know what the get is.
Yeah, yeah. The get is competitiveness. I don't know, man. It's pure pure DC brain that competing with China is like a winner in the minds of voters, right? Like this seems like I don't know a ton of the details of the bill. It seems like a bit of corporate welfare, a bit of sensible government investment. But the framing is, you know, I remember in 2020 the Biden campaign was trying to go hawkish on China, trying to out-hawk Trump on being on China. And like that kind of American exceptionalism, world power, competitiveness thing, like appeals at a really deep level to the DC class. And I think it's like completely out of step with how Americans actually feel. I don't think Americans, you know, whatever. I don't know what the polls are. I don't think anyone really feels threatened by the idea that China might grow. I don't think anyone necessarily. So I don't know. I find the idea that would be a priority to be a bit odd.
Well, I think there's something to be said for like we should have our own semiconductor manufacturing.
Totally, yeah,
I mean, we saw it in terms of what it did to cars, what it did to computers. You know, Matt couldn't get a new gaming system, but it's almost like they're afraid to sort of like sell it in the way that would be most palatable to Americans, because it sort of begs a question. Like they could say like, we're going to partner with industry to make sure that our supply lines are strong and that we're providing high quality jobs in this country. But as soon as you start saying that partnering thing, people are like, well, wait a second. What does this partnership entail? Like, we're investing the cash, and in business, like if people invest the cash, they get a return. It's not like you're doing us a favor to profit off of like hiring people to do the work in your factory that we paid for. Like you need those people. That's how you profit. You're getting profit off of those people's work. Like we should be getting some kickbacks here. We should be like returns on our investment. And you know, like this, it is as if they want to keep intact the idea that government doesn't create jobs, that right. That, you know, you're talking $100 billion for the National Science Foundation for research and development. Why not? That's why the drug companies need all these profits, because
why do they need patent protection for the drugs that'll be developed as a result of this, right?
I mean, this type of stuff, I think these type of bills, I don't have a problem with them, but they need to be, but we need to get returns on this money that we're invested. Like, we need to own, as a society, if we're going to pay for part of it, we need to own this stuff. And that, if that means no patents on this stuff, or it means, you know, a cap on the profits you can make, or shared profits, or whatever the mechanism is. But they try and make it about competing with China because they don't want to sell the part and let people know that you didn't build that. You know, we built this as a society. And so we should be getting the benefits of that, which means, like, you can't sell these products at a 100% markup or whatever it is.
There's something like, I think what this kind of policymaking actually sort of underscores is how fragile this ideology of is. This belief that the market is the most efficient way to allocate investment and resources, and that, like, the government planning, we have to be allergic to planning, like, we can't do any planning. It doesn't show the strength of that ideology. It shows that, like, they're so scared of how weak that idea is that they can't admit that they want to spend a lot of government money to direct investment to create public goods. But, like, you're not allowed to say that.
Yeah, and the fact that it's requiring, in order to spurn the kind of innovation that they fetishize, like, or spur, right, whatever one, to create the kind of innovation that they fetishize, it requires this kind of government investment, undercuts the mythology that market allocation is the most efficient way to distribute this.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. It's gone through three different names. The Endless Frontiers Act.
Oh, boy.
I'm surprised that didn't get more traction. The Competes Act and the United States Innovation and Competition Act. Now, at the very least, that one, at least, the U.S. innovation, it gets to, like, it gets almost there. But this isn't about, this is not about competition. This is about having a durable set of supply lines. It is about creating jobs, and it is about helping industry. It is about making up for the failure of market incentives for developing things that we need.
With a little bit of also complete jingoism and, like, a total disregard for the fact they're capitalizing on racism towards Chinese people in order to get bipartisan support for this kind of legislation.
This is what I meant by the politics of this being so bizarre to me, is that they think they need the jingoism to sell the investing. And it's like, you can just say, we want to spend a ton of money on jobs and making stuff. Like, you don't need the sales pitch for that is, we want to spend this money on doing that stuff. I don't think you need the additional, you don't need the jingoism to get it, like, over the plate.
Well, who do you think the jingoism is directed at? I mean, is it to sell it to the American public? I don't think the American public has any part in this whole transaction.
No, I don't think you're right. I think you're right. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's to sell it to, sell it to members of Congress.
I mean, Fox News talks constantly about, like, China's leaving us behind. Like, the Biden administration and, like, the Democratic leadership, as we've seen, are overly preoccupied with, like, what Beltway media, and that includes Fox News, is saying about their, you know, their agenda.
Well, I mean, if they were really concerned, they'd be building some high-speed rail right now.
Yeah.
You know, let's expand some metros around the country.
So, again, we just have a couple more minutes left here, but give us a sense. I mean, because I think this is going to be the summer of sort of sad discontent. Although, again, like the insulin thing, I feel like I'm gonna try and dine on that for weeks just to keep me from crying. But what is your sense of where we're gonna be? I don't know. Do you think the election, because of Roe v. Wade, it's going to spur people so that Democratic losses will be mitigated in some respect? Do you think, where do we go from here, particularly because the Supreme Court has sort of signaled like, yeah, this whole tap on the brakes thing that John Roberts wanted. Yeah, we're not doing that. We're going to go where we're in charge now. You can't stop us. And we're on a roll.
To some extent, I actually suspect that losses for Democrats will be less bad than they would have been absent the death of Roe. Which is kind of a cynical, it's a little bit of a cynical attitude, but I actually think it will juice turnout with women and suburban and educated women in particular for Democrats. But I don't think that's going to be enough to prevent the loss of at least one chamber of Congress. And then at that point, what we're going to see in the next few years is just this really stark divergence in how different places in America are governed. I think a lot of sort of liberals in government are not really prepared. A lot of Washington people, especially, they're not really prepared for how much these places will diverge in terms of how they're governed, how their elections are run, who's allowed. I've already said it's a joke to say we have to protect democracy in the sense that Wisconsin is currently not a democracy, and it hasn't been, and no one has a plan to make it a democracy. And I see that problem getting worse until someone figures out a way to get democratic reform done nationally and state by state.
I feel like we're, this era and the Democratic Party, at least, is particularly ill-suited for this transition. Yeah. Because,
yeah,
when you say we're going to see divergence in the states as to how they're governed, on some level, we're not. Because there's so little reporting now in terms of relative to where it was 20 years ago, in terms of how many reporters there are across the country doing local news. On some level, we're not going to know.
That's absolutely true. Yeah. And that's scary.
It's scary. And we also have a Democratic Party that has been so focused on a federal sort of strategy that, the two-term president, Democratic president in this century, basically shut down the DNC's 50 state strategy. It was so devalued. We lost 1,000 seats across the country during the Obama administration, many of whom, we talk about why we have no ambitious Democratic governors it's because
they all lost power.
The minor league teams essentially, were basically, we shut them all down. And a lot of those people left politics. And so it could be a very ugly period, but at the same time, I think, for individuals looking for some form of hope out there, there's a lot more opportunity and need and meaning to doing stuff locally.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's going to be, and I think it's hard. It's really hard, but it's very easy to buy a state senator, but that also means it's a lot easier to remove one than you think.
Yep. Well said. Alex Perrine, co-host of The Politics of Everything, contributing editor at The New Republic, and the proprietor of The Good AP, the one with new insights. We'll put a link to all that in our podcast and YouTube description. Thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Sam and Emma.
Thank you.
Alex Perrine, ladies and gentlemen. Always a pleasure. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking to Liz Winstead, my old buddy from Air America. She created the original Daily Show, co-created, I think, and has been working on helping women get abortion access for years. We'll be right back after this. Back, Sam Cedar, Emma Vigeland on the Majority Report. It is Casual Friday. Joining us now, my old friend from back in the Air America days. Well, really, actually, even like Boston days.
Back in the poker days when we actually played poker.
That when people would do that, they even knew like use cards, like actual physical cards. She's co-creator of The Daily Show and founder of the Abortion Access Front. Liz Winstead, great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Oh, so glad to be here and talk to you. It's crazy.
You have been working in that space of helping women, particularly in states where there was sort of like a de facto ban on abortion in terms of access, not necessarily from a legal perspective as much as like just there had been so much to undercut the a woman's right to or a person's right to get abortion services. You've been doing this for years now. Just tell us about what the Abortion Access Front has been doing, like, literally, I guess.
So literally what we have been doing is we have been traveling around the country. We've been to 45 states, every shitty state you never want to go to. And we put on comedy and music shows and create this platform for the providers and the activists in these towns to be able to talk to our audiences. And then we set up booths within the space so that you have 300-400 people in a room who didn't know what was going on before. And then they sign up so that they can hear directly from the clinics and the activists what needs to get done locally, and then they can take action with them. And then we also do this wild sort of Habitat for Humanity thing where my team at Abortion Access Front is made up of not only comics and producers, but also activists who have mad skills at like gardening and painting and like fixing shit. So we go to a clinic, especially these small community clinics, and we'll like fix their fence or paint their whole clinic or do their gardening. Because what folks I don't think realize in this larger picture of oppression is that if you provide abortion care in a hostile community, you can't get somebody to come and mow your lawn, fix your fence, do shit that any small business would have no problem getting to do, right? So at our shows, after we've sort of done this like, you know, short-term fix, we tell the audience what they need on the regular, and 99% of the time, we hook up that plumber or that landscaper with the clinic, and then they understand that activism a lot of times is parking your company van in front of a clinic and providing that care, saying, I'm happy they're in my community and I'm happy to provide service for them. So that's like the big stuff we do. Secondarily, we do a lot of data mining where we have created the largest anti-abortion database in the country, We track anti-abortion extremists, and then connect them to Oath Keepers, three percenters. And when January 6th happened, we'd been tracking them for so long that we pulled 30 people videos from January 6th before they got to take them down and turn them over to the FBI.
Wow.
Yeah.
I want to just touch on that first thing, because I think that's such a great model for, it seems to me, like all sorts of activism. And, yeah. and people don't, I think, really fully appreciate and don't always use the value like that's associated with bringing in whatever kind of show it is, but any type of performers, because you're getting people there, and campaigns do this. That's why they bring they get a top star to come and appear at a campaign rally, because it's going to bring in other people. But the way that your organization has been sort of like creating mini organizations, essentially, like these mini mutual aid type mm-hmm. of situations is really fantastic. But what do you do now? Because those abortion clinics in anywhere from, probably as of today, 10, but within the next several months, probably closer to like 25 or 26 states across the country abortion is going to be illegal. So like how do you shift now? What's the plan?
Well, the ping ponging is really intense, Sam. And like, even in the states where it hasn't fallen yet, doctors are terrified to provide care. If there's any kind of bounty law in place, the abortion funds are terrified to help fund people. So there's clinics like Whole Women's Health, which is an incredible clinic. And I have to say I'm on the board, so as I plug, but they are the ones that brought the lawsuit. They are in Texas and they're in six other states. They're fundraising now to open a clinic in New Mexico. There's a clinic in Bristol, Tennessee, that's moving to Bristol, Virginia, which is one of those dividing lines within the middle of the city, moving over to Virginia, which is for now a safe state. North Dakota, moving to Minnesota. So those things are really happening, but people are also skittish to provide care to somebody who's coming from a red state to a state that provides, because they don't want them to go back to their state if they take medication abortion, because could they be liable? They don't know. So it's a mess. So what we do now is, a couple of things. I think that what we're doing actually is we want to have people understand all the ways that you can help right now, whether that's volunteering or fundraising for an abortion fund or a practical support fund. And those two things are different. The practical support folks are the ones that fund everything but the abortion, the travel, the lodging, the childcare, all of that. Those two things are going to be crucial. And how they need to expand their activist bases is for them to decide. And as this is all unveiling, they're going to have a lot of information to help out, right? How do we actually deal with our state legislators, because it's just, let's be clear, Sam, the platitudes. I'm way more mad at the sort of complacency of Democrats and liberals than I am about the, anti-abortion White Walkers that we know exist, right? It's like, it's been so hard to convince people, politicians who are Democrats who say they're pro-choice, to actually fundamentally understand the humanity around denying somebody medical care that determines how they determine their life, like for real. And they don't fight for it to the necessary level that it deserves. So there's a re-education process right now so that people will actually not only just say, I'll back shitty laws, but I will actually create abortion forward laws. And so, helping people really understand how to lobby and how to actually talk to politicians and demand of them that they need to vote on abortion care and reproductive care as though it's a civil right, because it is. And then really helping people take out into the streets and do effective direct action. Our movement has started to really groundswell with Abortion Access Front and organizations like Shout Your Abortion and Thank God for Abortion. If you'll notice, they all have abortion in the title because saying abortion is crucial. But really developing direct action organizations that have that ACT UP feel, where you are taking action that matters, that you are calling out the people who are being the most oppressive, centering the bad guys rather than yourself. You know, so doing that kind of stuff is really key. And then letting people know about where all these places exist, because the one thing that can be really harmful with doing abortion in general is if you provide care or try to fund abortions, you get death threats. Full stop. That is your jam, right? And so don't start something on your own. There's tons of really cool organizations doing the work. But because they're so overwhelmed doing the work, they don't have time to elevate the work. So that's where we come in.
The when you say White Walkers, right, it's a funny way to put it, because like there seems to have been, what's most jarring about, you know, the grieving process that I'm kind of going through with this is how Democrats for my entire lifetime have been campaigning on, or they haven't said the word abortion, but the leftier Democrats, there's always been an understanding that if we lose the Supreme Court, we could lose Roe v. Wade. This is a precarious, precarious situation. And so that's been fundamental to like my political education. But now that moment has come, mm-hmm. and they're acting like, you know, we don't have a plan. Like, we haven't been able to see this percolating, basically. And that is just such an odd response to me. I mean, I know your organization probably has just so many things in place already, because there was an understanding that with this conservative Supreme Court, this was coming. Like, but for local officials in the states that you're operating, Democrats, maybe allies, what has been shocking to you about the, I guess, the lack of preparedness for, we've seen it on the federal level, but on the local level, for what we all knew was very likely to happen?
Well, you know, it's like our side didn't even figure out midterm elections until 2006, right? Like, forget about it. We were just complacent in off-year elections. And so I think that the state, I don't think people fundamentally understand that the state politics are really where things are happening, and the court system with which they go through before they even get to the Supreme Court is where things are happening. And so I think that the biggest surprise, honestly, and I have been focused on this for 10 years, is it wasn't enough. They're sore losers in a way that, you know, Adam Serwer always says, you know, the cruelty is the point. And I feel like they're almost like zombies who just have a feeding frenzy on cruelty. And then when the satiation goes away, they have to create a new way to be cruel. And so I think I underestimated the cruelty of what this looks like and the hatred of what this looks like. And I think that we all did. You know, I knew that the end goal was retain power and all that, but man, that has been the thing that I think gobsmacked everybody.
What are you guys, or what are you aware of? Is there any organizations out there or any mechanism? I mean, you said you were collecting data on the people who attack these clinics, right, and who are threatening these clinics. But what about the data? There's going to be a whole new class of women now, and people who have uteruses, I guess, who are going to be denied healthcare for things that, where the healthcare would appear to be an abortion or close enough that it's going to inhibit healthcare providers from providing that healthcare.
I love this question.
And on top of that, also, you know, like the exceptions of a woman's, you know, of rape or incest or of a woman's life, that's also meaningless because, you know, a doctor can't assess whether someone's been raped enough to prove it in a court of law in time to provide an abortion. They can't do the same with incest. And like, no one has developed a scale as to what constitutes a threat to a woman's or a person's life. Mm-hmm. Such that it reaches the threshold of a non-prosecutable abortion. So there's going to be like, and we could be talking about anywhere from 40 to 100,000 people a year in this situation, maybe more.
Well, yeah, Sam, I mean, let's just think about that for a second, right? Some stuff that people don't really think about. For example, in some red states, because of the reporting laws, if you went to your shrink and said, I'm pregnant and I'm thinking of getting an abortion and I really need to figure this out, they may have to report you to the authorities. There are antidepressants and antipsychotic medications that are considered abortifacients because they've been doing studies that sometimes between 2 and 5% of the time, people who are on some of these drugs will miscarry. So is prescribing life-saving medication for somebody dealing with mental illness, is that going to go away? And then that's going to cause possibly suicide, right? So you think about cancer treatments that would harm the fetus, lupus, arthritis. There's medications that people take where the risk is miscarriage, and doctors are terrified that they're going to be prosecuted and have their license yanked because they prescribe those things. And it's...
Or go to jail.
Right. Go to 10 years, fines. Your whole life's work is gone. You know, we all heard about the 10-year-old in Ohio. You know what people don't think about that 10-year-old in Ohio? If there's abuse, there's a good chance that in cases like that, the 10-year-old is immediately taken from their parents' home and put into the system. If that happened in Ohio, a state that doesn't provide abortion in any case, that child doesn't get the care. That child's under state authority.
There, and Ohio is not going to bring that child to Indiana abortion care.
That is correct. Neither probably would have foster family.
So all these things are going on. Yes. And we were just talking with Alex Perrine that we have a dearth of local reporting as it is, you know, and which is not to say that that would necessarily be picked up by a local reporter. But is there, I mean, who out there is like developing the VAERS system, you know, the equivalent of the adverse reactions to vaccines that anybody can go and put their own thing? Who out there is starting to collect these stories? Because you know, we know about that 10-year-old in Ohio because it happened to hit the news, but it wouldn't shock me if there was three other of those cases.
There's a jillion.
In this past, you know, in the next 30 days, where they're going to be like that, we're not going to hear about.
Well, so I will recommend and self-plug. I have a podcast called Feminist Buzzkills Live, and on my co-hosts are Mo Giallo-Bodeal, who is an activist and works with Made Abortion Access Front, and my other co-host is a woman named Marie Kahn who works for the Midwest Access Coalition, which is one of the largest practical support funds in the country and travels these people all around, right? So as we get stories from the folks on the ground, we're telling people those stories. So if you want to hear weekly, not just what's in the headline, but what those ramifications are and where these stories are, definitely listen to our pod. The other thing that we're trying to do is we want people to understand where they can elevate and learn and apply their own capacities to this fight, right? Not everyone's going to run for office. Not everyone's going to be able to do things. But there is a myriad of ways that you can actually elevate and help. And so on July 17th, we're doing this massive live stream show where we're bringing the coolest people from around the country to have a series of panel conversations about the different areas that you can activate. And then in between each panel, we're asking people to watch, have house parties. We're giving you a toolkit of things to ask your own selves, brainstorming ways that you can help. And then this is crazy. At the end of the day, we are vetting every single person with Digital Defense Fund and some other security teams to make sure they're not trolls. And then we're going to hook up everybody who watched to where they said their interests lie locally so that we can bring people together. And then we have this once you've been vetted, we have this live activist calendar that's got national events, but also local events. So you can do a pull down to say, I'm in Toledo, things that I can do within this radius, so that people can always remain activated, know who to contact in their community, and they've been vetted by trusted sources.
Well, that's amazing. And so, you know, we've had many people, you know, both on, via the show and calls and IMs, but also in, you know, my personal life, people are like, you know, what do I do? And this is a great opportunity to figure out what you can do there.
So, and this the cool thing is, it's July 17th. If you can't make that day, we're making the trainings and the toolkits available to you after the fact. You just have to get vetted. And we vet people, and people are like, what do you mean? You have to get my email and social media. Let me tell you, we cannot introduce anybody to be part of this movement unless we make sure that you are not somebody who wants to cause harm. It's really just crucial to know that. We just want to find out what your email is and the city, state you live in, and if we can verify you on social media to make sure you're not a bot or not an anti-troll, like, let us do that. It's the least we can do. It's your shit safe.
Very important. I mean, particularly, we're talking about, you know, some of the most, you know, vulnerable people out there. And so,
and also the intersections, as you can only imagine, Sam, and probably already know because you know so much, but like the intersections of anti-abortion extremism and white supremacy, it's a circle, right? I mean, these, I'd love to come back and talk to you about the kids' violent training camps that they set up to teach kids how to have guns through their churches, all this kind of stuff that we've uncovered. It's a whole nother thing, but it's super fascinating.
I would love to have that conversation. I've always contended that, like, you know, that racist folks and misogynist folks do not perceive themselves as like, well, you know, I don't like black people.
I'm a single issue bigot.
Right. Well, yes. I mean, like, they just don't make a distinction. I was saying this in the context of, like, you know, how is it possible that someone could, you know, vote for Donald Trump and Barack Obama? Well, it's because they're like, we're not going to have two non-normal presidents in a row. Like, it's just, it is, they're just perceiving other people as being fundamentally different from them. And if they're a white male, that means, it, you know, if you're anything other than white, and if you're anything other than male, you're on the other team, as it were, and that's it. But Liz, we're going to put a link to and what site can they go to for more information on July 17th?
Easy. OperationSaveAbortion.com. You can find out all the information there.
All right. We're going to put links to that in the podcast and YouTube description. Liz, great to see you. And
so great to see you. Thanks for having me on.
Good
I
luck
super
with
appreciate it.
It.
Thanks.
All right. All right, folks. We're going to take a quick break, head into the so-called fun half of the program, wherein we will take your phone calls. We will take your IMs. Will we take our phone calls? Yeah, we'd probably take. I mean, look.
We'll see.
We're doing our best. Okay? A lot of news lately. We get into August. We'll be super hot and sweaty in this office. Like,
God. Someone tweeted at me something like, you're always shiny on the show. And just because I'm sweating. Yeah, that's why. It's because I'm sweating.
Yeah.
Yep.
We have an air conditioning issue. And it's not like, I don't know what we're going to do about it. I mean, I'm waiting on our landlord to fix it. He's a good guy. But, you know, these things.
It's like a built-in unit.
It's a built-in
unit. I have that in my bedroom, and it's just not working.
This thing is not not happening. So I may get...
Sons of bitches.
Yeah, no kidding. I may have to get one of those portable jobbies. But then one of you is going to have to take it home at one point.
Will you pay for it?
What? I mean, of course I'll pay for it.
Okay, then maybe.
646-257-3920 is the number. Again, you are going to have to, you know... caveat emptor. I don't know what else to tell you. Caveat emptor. Go ahead. But voicemails are in. Caveat call. Could ceiling fans help? Yeah, I guess so. And then it would also chop our heads off because it's not that.
They might. Installing ceiling fans, I think it's pretty easier to put an air conditioner in.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
I have a fan here, though. That's helped me.
Also, if you want to IM the show, go to majority app.com. get the app. It's free, and we're improving it. Improvement is happening soon. And we will you can IM the show. Also, join the Discord, majoritydiscord.com. Or also, and none of these things are mutually exclusive, folks, get subscribe for our newsletter. Every day, Jack and Corey send a brief email so that you can get situated on the top news stories of the day of interest of folks on the left. Eventually, we're going to go to, I think, some type of like, you know, freemium thing where you get, you know, part of it, or we get a couple of days a week. That's going to happen actually relatively soon, but we're not going to charge very much for it. We just need to break even essentially on the thing. But it's great. People love it. We've got like, I don't know, 6,000 people in the Discord. I think we got at least 6,000 people more who read the, signed up for the email. I mean, closer actually, I think probably like 12,000-14,000 maybe people on that. I don't know. Also, don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority. See you in the...
Well, I got a plug. Milton Alamadi.
Sorry, Matt.
I had a great conversation with Milton Alamadi on his book Manufacturing Hate about the New York Times. He did a master's thesis where they're like, we're not going to give you all the information of people who covered Africa in the 50s, so why don't you just go into our archives? And he went into the archives and found a whole bunch of letters saying things from those correspondents like, I care more about cannibals than Kwame Nkrumah. And
was this the Times?
This was the Times.
Yeah, we had him on to talk about that too at one point, right?
It's a great book. I mean, as a media studies graduate, it's a book that if I was a professor, I would assign to every class because especially at a time where people like democracy dies in the darkness from the Washington Post, like a true accounting of the role that these institutions played in not only like bigotry, but like helping set the foundations for apartheid in Africa is extremely important to know that that's the dark side of the power of the press.
All right, folks, see you in the fun half. 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Unpacked.
Matt.
Drew.
Unpacked. What is up, everyone?
Unpacked.
Nomi Keen.
You did it.
Unpacked.
Let's go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon. Unpacked.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women's...
Stop. Talking oh, for wow. a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But dude, you want to smoke this 7A?
Yes.
Hi, me? Is it?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm gonna go throw up.
You libertarians.
They're so stupid though.
Common sense says of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him!
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I wanna say.
857-210-35-501. One half. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion.
Sold.
It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less of
it. But let me say this.
Poop. Call it satire. Sam goes satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about yeah. you is just like every day, all day, like yeah. everything you do.
Without a doubt.
Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled,
wow,
folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock. We're already late, and the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.